Greetings from Cali, Colombia. I always joke that's the extent of my Spanish. And we have some nice visitors here. Krishna Murari and Ladini Radha are here. And this weekend we have our yoga teacher training, as we have about 30 people. So the section that we're dealing with is with the Yoga Sutras. So I'm going to continue what I've been doing for the last few weeks, just before eventually I'll start the Bhagavatam again. And what I'll do is, you know, give you something that I prepared. Of course, I don't really like to give retreads, but this is something maybe you heard, but it's always a challenge. There are 30 new people that don't really, I think, have a frame of reference for philosophy. And then you're supposed to teach the Yoga Sutras. The first thing I did is show them my book. Because it's kind of like underlined and posted and different colors. So it means I've gone over it about 10 times to really try to deeply understand the subject. Because to break something down and be very succinct, you have to understand something extremely deeply. And I gave the example of the author Pasquale, I quote this often. He said, "I'm sorry my letter was so long, but I didn't have time to write it shorter." Meaning, when you really understand the subject, it's kind of like TED Talks. I'm really impressed. You see how much people can put into 20 minutes of a talk when they've really understood the subject. And a lot of times you see people go on with classes, and, you know, because they don't got the point. It just goes on and on and on and on. So it's really the challenge, and it's the challenge of realization, which Prabhupada has the ability to communicate. Because to communicate something, you have to alter the language. You have to alter the language you've heard something to accommodate frame of reference, means in which people understand it. So Prabhupada, you know, said that gave an example, spoke with Sukadeva Goswami. And Sukadeva means parrot. And it's not a parrot that you just repeat. It's not like a parrot give a class, even a parrot. Now, it's a challenge to get read mind. I gave an example of the disease of autism. I heard an analysis of where people can't read minds. So people who lack that kind of understanding, people can't communicate to them. Even if generally speaking, if you use the subject deeply, then you'll be able to constantly reform it without losing the essence of its meaning. Really an art, you know. That's why I don't like, for example, I'm giving class, even if it's a purport of, I don't like to read long purports. You know, I hope it's not sacrilegious, but I want to understand the idea and see who the audience is, how to understand their things, what their goals, what are the points. So that was my first point to them, and therefore, I said that what I really want to do is really first summarize not just the Yoga Sutras, but the reason why they are important. That's so important, yeah. The reason why they're important. Why do we seek knowledge in the first place? So I did that by summarizing three questions, which I usually use at the beginning of every class. And one of the reasons I use them is because one of the greatest scholars of the Yoga Patanjali Sutras was a person named A.G. Mohan, who is a disciple of Krishnamacharya, who I personally met and actually walked with him. I picked him up at his apartment, take him to where he was giving the lecture. Of course, my friend was actually hosting him in New York. So we went over there to the lecture, and the good scholars, excuse me, it's not that they just know a lot of verses, but they know the subject well enough and deep enough that they can communicate it. So here I see this perfect, like, Brahman means a peaceful, tolerant, controlled person. And here, it doesn't really have such a frame reference. So what I do is I generally use these three questions. And I call it happiness test. The reason I call it happiness test is ultimately that's the purpose of philosophy. All knowledge to give happiness. So it's relevant to study what makes one happy. Not the right concept, idea. You see people in the audience, they can't be happy. I walk down the street in New York City, and I see so many people wandering aimlessly. And then I look that my life is relatively peaceful, because we're in the material world. We're not the controllers. We're not the enjoyers. Things don't move our way. Our karma comes. Things come. But relatively peaceful. And I look at these people, and most of them are so much in anxiety. And then you look at the different identities that they were assuming to become happy. And this variety of identities, that identity, they think that I walked one, I saw all young people dressed in ways, and they have a specific identity, and the identity reflects what their objectives or goals are. And I think it was so disconnected from the soul. I was like, disconnected from the soul. And I was thinking, what's the problem that they acknowledge? They laugh at us. That's what my father said. Books are the basis of, why to distribute books, because he wanted to give knowledge. And I see that also. I think one thing I do like here, and I think a question and are sitting here, is at least it's developed now where we give shastra. Otherwise, it's very hard to transform. And you see when you read the shastra. Now, Atul gives a Spanish Bhagavatam class, and when Jai is here, he's giving the Bhagavatam. I'm giving the CC. They'll come and they'll go, and they'll come in 40 years. But they won't change that much until they hear the Shastra, until they get knowledge. Knowledge changes your life. When you have real knowledge, when you hear, happens is when you hear knowledge, then if you have faith in who you're hearing from, when you hear knowledge, you'll think about it. You try to understand it's true. What's who's a good teacher, speak through your frame of reference to bring you beyond your frame of reference. That's why we become dedicated to teachers, because they can communicate. So through your frame of reference, they're going to enlighten you and bring you beyond it. And it has a ring of truth. Or you've had experience of in that relationship of moving forward and developing yourself. Krishnamurari, he's read Prabhupada's books, very good to him, and he knows what it means and the transformation of his life. So what happens is you hear, and then you say, when you hear with faith, you try to understand. And then you share and understand, and you go by. Rather than looking at things simply through our spiritual vision, based on our ambitions, our desires, I just got a message to hear from it from Tiny Tai. I'm going to get my phone. I'm going to call back on my phone, which I was hesitant to use, because I'm not sure what my phone phone is. Okay, just give me a few minutes.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear
so well, but there's nothing I can do. My phone is not getting through. I'll just try my best here. Okay. Anyway, we were talking about this importance of communicating, and that when you hear knowledge, you start to see a concept. We all have that experience that we with it in one way. We have a philosophical understanding that tells us it's not actually this way. When we act that way, according to Shastra, and I'm sorry if the perception is not so good, all I can get right here is Skype, but so you look at things through the chakra. Enough times, you actually that way. We can look at how we look at the world 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and how do we look at the world now? And how will we see the world in the future as we continue the process of gaining knowledge, having experiences, etc., well, we don't see the truth. We don't see the truth any more than two people can look at the same thing and see different things. According to some, somebody goes in the country and they think it's beautiful. Another person, mosquitoes, or just some conditions you see, very exciting and dynamic. Just appreciation, right? There's one candidate, and you see him with your eyes, but there are Republicans, Democrats, socialists, and Nazis. There's all kinds of ways of looking at the same thing. So we see how much experience and the lack of knowledge affects our perception. Anyway, so I gave these questions, and the first one is you found what you are looking for. And I explained to people what everyone is looking for is happiness. And I what Aristotle said. He said, happiness is the goal. It is never a means for something else. You never say that happiness can't buy money. It can't buy happiness. Because happiness is the goal. he said, someone may say, no, something else is happiness. But then Aristotle will say, no, that's just the means to happiness. So making happiness your goal, in one sense, is action, in another sense, it's not, when you understand what happiness is. Happiness is not selfishness. It's the desire for the opposite. It's the desire to serve others. It's the desire to serve God. It's the desire to sacrifice. So you're wanting something, but not for yourself. I don't define that as selfishness if someone gets pleasure from giving themselves to others or surrendering or sacrificing to God. Ananda Moya Abhyasa, we all are by nature desire seeking. By nature, all desire seeking. But desire is not selfish. There's selfish desire and there's unselfish desire. You know, we're searching for happiness. There's a desire in us. We're looking for fulfillment. It's somehow or other, it's a personal desire that's constitutional. Without desire, you don't live. But the fulfillment of that is selflessness and service, which is happiness. But anyway, happiness is the goal. There is something lacking in us that everyone seeks to fill. The question is if you know what actually fulfills that hole or lack within you. And it's love or devotion. And you can see that you can have a person, he can be the wealthiest person in the world, the most powerful in all the opulences that we get, still not feel fulfilled. Because that's not what's missing. There's something else missing. It's our nitya seva, it's our dharma, it's our nature. I just love Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's a Sanskrit derivative of the word that has to deal with essence, the quality which cannot be taken away. Dharma, we usually say in relationship with your duty. Your duty is related to essence of who you are. So, nitya seva, or eternal duty. In all conditions, it's not gender, it's not nationality, it's not occupation, it's not ashram, because those things change. They change in this life, they change from life to life. Although you have a dharma according to your body to function properly, both your mind, body, and for a social sense, so we have a dharma, but it's not our dharma. Our nitya dharma is to serve God. And anxiety is that service has become transformed in it, that spirit, that desire of the soul has been somehow transformed into lust. And it's described, it's as if water has become ice. The nature of water is in ice, but it's not functioning. You can't drink it, you can't bathe in it, you can't cook with it, but it's there. It's just been transformed. Certain conditions around the ice will bring it back to nature. So our nature is to serve. That's our nitya dharma. And certain conditions, certain practices will bring out that eternal nature. But anyway, not the class I gave to the people yesterday, but that's okay because I don't want to say that you found what you look at. Aristotle said is happiness, and a very nice point was made here. I read from the notes. I read from my notes. notes here. One must practice the things produce happiness, since if that is present, we have everything, and if it is absent, we will do everything in order to have it. This is what I was stressing. And what my point is going to be when you discuss philosophy, that happiness is an inner condition. It's an inner condition. And that has to be awakened. It's not because externally we have no control. So how can we attain happiness externally? We have to attain happiness by how we act in the world, not how we can control the world. Happiness will only be by changing our consciousness, not changing the things around us. Because if that's our objective, and I may say many times, if that's our faith, if that's our faith, we won't be happy, because that type of faith and happiness requires that you are the controller, and we're not the controller. So if you want to be the enjoyer, materially, not in terms of ego and sensual, and that's your goal, you want to be the enjoyer, you have to be the controller, and you're not. So either you're hankering or lamenting. Either you want things you don't have, or you're in anxiety that you're going to lose the things you have. And maybe having things is more anxiety, because there's so much fear of losing. You become attached. That's why atyahara is against bhakti, to actually accrue more and more and more, because it develops more and more fear, because you have more that you need less. The last group, Country Club, we sent Krishna Murari and Madini Radha to the Country Club. This beautiful stream flowing through the country. And the Country Club is only used Sunday afternoon, so there's no one there. So they came, they had the whole Country Club, and they bathed in the river. But next to the Country Club is Columbia. How then they have 24 hours, two guards and shifts. And when you come in, a gate closes behind you, and then there's another gate. Like, so much fear. So the question of happiness. So have you found what you're looking for? That was the first question. And then the second question is, is it eternal? Because it's not enough to just have an objective. There has to be quality to the objective that suits finding happiness. Of a goal that suits happiness. So reality, because eventually you'll lose it. And again, I always have to qualify, because when you speak renunciation, which is part of our philosophy, is also part of our philosophy, which is attachment. So you also have to balance out. What's the philosophy of attachment? The philosophy of attachment is that to become peaceful for the higher endeavor of realizing consciousness, to be peaceful, then the body must be as much visible physical, mental, and social peace. The body attachment. Give up my family? You know, should I give up my relationship? Should I give up my things? What does it mean? It means it's not the goal. It's not the goal. So eternal is such an important objective. Let me say, and I had some quotes about that, if I can find it. Oh, yeah. Seeking happiness outside ourselves is like waiting for sunshine in a cave facing north. If you're facing the wrong way and you want the sun, you're not going to get it. So if you're seeking happiness the wrong direction, you won't get it. The direction has to be inner life. Is happiness, according to the Yoga Sutras, according to Sankhya, according to Visheshika, according to Nyaya. All philosophies, it's an inner happiness, according to modern psychology. Right? A modern psychologist does what? They kind of tell you, right? Your problem is not what's in your life. Your problem is how you're looking at it. They try to give you tools, whether they're successful or not. I heard that Argentina is the highest percentage of, Argentinians before me. Jimena, everyone knows Jimena, and her husband, Sebastian. I heard that Argentina has the highest per capita, highest psychologist per capita.
My mother and father.
Your mother and father, huh? I'm not making things about your mother and father, but it's very interesting that you always see a lot of times that people who become psychologists are people who had psychological problems. What? And they went to psychologists and they got a little relief, and then they said, I want to be a psychologist. So it's a little bit different than what like a Vedic system was. The people who are supposed to be helping you with your minds are ones who have become peaceful themselves. So, and then the third question. Because people sometimes have eternal goals. This is a very Catholic country, which I see a lot of benefits in keeping family together, which is healthy for people. I don't want to go into the pros and cons and institutional history of the church, but I'm seeing here there's a certain nice sweetness and security in people because the family structures mostly have stayed intact. And that belief in God is so strong. More than, I would say, in America, that's the thing that I noticed about America, that once you become hip and modern, et cetera, you're more likely to throw out God in the people that are, you know, the wealthy and the things, they're more likely to throw out God. But here it seems that It's not the same degree. It's a faith. You know, they just believe in Jesus, and they believe in God. So they have an eternal objective, but that doesn't mean they're happy. Because unless you're living it and living within it, see, and the thing of yoga is to realize the soul and live in the soul. What's called yoga? When, according to yoga philosophy, when you stop your thoughts, then you become self-aware. The level of samadhi, called sampragata samadhi, is you see the soul reflected through the clear mind, but there's still some scars or thoughts to maintain the mind. Boy, this is different from Vaishnava philosophy, and I wrote an article, What I Disagree About with Yoga Philosophy. I'm conscious. I think, therefore I am. And yoga is, I think, therefore I'm not. So I'm Cartesian in that sense. The yoga philosophy is what? You become self-aware. Your consciousness just reflected in itself, always. It's not connected with anything external. But anyway, whether you agree exactly with that, that's basically the goal of spiritual life. Self-realization, that there's something that you realize that's eternal and blissful and beyond all this, that you can live in always. And that's why existentialism is such a depressing philosophy. Existentialism, there is no God. And because there is no God, there is no meaning. They are honest people. Existentialists are honest people. They embrace the conclusion of their philosophy. There is no meaning, there is no morality, there is no purpose. Why live? I have to bow down to them rather than the modern atheists who deny God and still somehow profess that there's meaning. Still profess that there's meaning. When there's really no way to derive meaning, when everything is moving randomly and in a deterministic meaning. So how can you do something wrong if you're not responsible for it? And that's what determinism means. Atheism is determinism. Something exploded and moving and banging into each other, and this is just the result of it. So, how are you responsible? How is anyone responsible? And how can you assign any qualities or meanings to what is happening? That's a simplistic way of looking at it. So, living, and that's yoga. And yoga, and how does yoga do this? And I explained to them how yoga does this. When you quell the other thoughts and you meditate, when you focus on one object, one thought, the other objects become stilled or quieted. The mind becomes purer. It comes to the platform of sattva, the nature of being. The nature of the mind is that it is not distorted and clean, and therefore perfectly reflective of the self. You can see your true self. And eventually, somehow or other, you can dissolve the mind and live within the self. Now, today's class will be the second part of it, because now you have an object. It's, you know, this is, it's a technique. It's not a theist conception or a metaphysic. It's some metaphysical understanding. It's a technique. Meditate on one thing, the mind will be purified. One lady came up to me yesterday, and I said, "What did you remember about the class?" She said, "The whole class was about me." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I was in so much anxiety because after I spoke, Jai Jagannath, very brilliant speaker, he described Sankhya, how the mind works, how we have the mind." She said, "The whole class is about me." What? She said, "It's all in my mind." It's all in my mind. It's really a struggle. You really have to be mindful not to live in the mind and be embarrassed by it. Because the mind doesn't make rational choices on itself without the use of the buddhi or the intelligence. So it's all in the mind. It's all in the mind. So today, coming attractions for the class, we're finishing in 2 minutes, but okay. No, yeah, sit. The coming attractions for today's class is, because we discussed meditation means an object to study the mind. Now we're going to discuss and compare the two ways in which you can focus on an object. And there's two ways in which you can focus on an object: by your willpower, this is good. And the second way is by your attachment to the object. And we're going to discuss in detail why, therefore, bhakti is the best type of yoga. Because how do you rate what is the effectiveness of a yoga? By the facility it gives you to concentrate. So an emotional connection to an object is far, far more effective than an intellectual connection to an object. And I'm going to discuss the two reasons why. I'm giving coming attractions. I'm not going to explain it in the class here because I'm going to speak another 20 minutes. That, so you have to meditate on an object. I'm going to discuss the preferred choice of object for meditation, which is God. And this is not from my own deep personal theistic convictions. I'm just saying what the Yoga Sutras says. The Yoga Sutras says you can meditate on anything because this is not, it's a technique. But what is the best object of meditation? And it's clearly God in the form of sound, which is called mantra. And we'll discuss two reasons why it's the most effective. One, because we have a relationship with God. Natural. So, at least according to the Yoga Sutras, with an open heart, that love will develop. And the second reason is, it's not just a prop. It's a person who can reciprocate with our effort, who is in control of the obstacles that prevent us from meditating, which are actually impossible to remove by our willpower alone. And I don't think any yogi has ever achieved perfection outside of mantra, without the And if you see the purports in the Yoga Sutras, they are, by the main commentators, they are so theistic, it's unbelievable. I'll just read a few here, how theistic they are. I mean, it's mind-blowing, actually. This is how theistic they are. According to Vyas, devotion to God involves a particular type of devotion, bhakti vishesh. Simply by the yogi's longing, God bestows grace upon the yogi. When this happens, the fruits of samadhi become quickly available. As Ramananda Saraswati puts it, God turns towards the yogi, and as a result of such devotion, and he says, let this that he desires be his. These are the standard commentaries. Here's another. Vigyan Bhikshu states that by meditating on the Lord with love, the yogi earns the Lord's favor. So this is why Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena taratmanam shradhavam bhajate yo mam smeyuktamata. Of all yogis, one who worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. Because it's so much more absorbing. Today, I when I'm here, I get up early. Get up early. Got up this morning, 1:30. After just laying in bed as a sense of joy for a while, up, saying, let me just have 10 more minutes. You know, let me just like enjoy a little bit more. And then I said, oh man, let me look at the clock now. Because I really like my morning hours. And I looked at the clock, 1:30. And I enjoyed extra rolling in bed, putting the covers over me. Saying, oh, just 10 more minutes. I wasn't tired, but just that fetus-like blanket around me, curled up in a higher state of enjoyment of sleep. And then meditating. First the writing, and then meditating. And some austerity, you know, you got to control your mind, you got to sit up. But candle as my meditation, looking at something and staring at it and clearing all the other thoughts out without accessing my heart. I'd be so frustrated. But this is like, you know, God, devotion in the heart, some feelings, some joy. Some thoughts sometimes, you know, when will it end? You know, but what's going on? Of course, I don't have a family. I don't work for a living. When you get older, things don't matter so much. Definitely. And then what to speak of putting the music, putting it in music. That really, I gave a class on this last Wednesday. And I'm talking about, I've told this before, when I went to this procession. And you know, I got there at 5, they told me to be there at 5, it started at 9. And I'm like a real on-time freak, so I was already angry at 5:05. So now I was like angry, like, for, you know, and then it starts. And what's the first thing they do? They have to light up the procession. It's India in the summer at night. They get the coolies and put the lamps on their head. And somehow in Colombia, you know, the door is open. It's not like a crisis, you know. Although you had a few mosquitoes last night, we should put something in there then, or spray yourself. But generally, the door open, like in Brindavan, I leave the door open, and then I'm spending the rest of the day getting rid of the flies. Tamal Krishnamurti taught me how to catch flies. You know how you catch flies? You have to sneak up behind them. No, really, because they don't have sensors behind them. So if you sneak up behind them and then go quickly up, because they're going to jump up, you'll catch them. So I used to sit there, sneak behind the fly. I saw Tamal Krishnamurti. He went, throw the fly out. But here, the not so many bugs. But there were so many bugs. Torturous. When is it going to end? You know, it already started. See, and Indian possessions, they can go on for 12 hours. But somehow or other, B.B. Govindaswamy, we had these Bengalis and African Americans, B.B. Govindaswamy, Radhacharan, my friend Radhacharan was there too. He's also a good musician. And the kirtan was just so powerful that, you know, got into it, looked at my watch, it was 5 a.m. Halfway through. then we stopped. Okay, I'm sorry if the reception wasn't so good. Would anyone like to say hello to indicate to me that this class went further than Cali, Colombia? Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Who, Jai Sri Radhe.
Hare Krishna. It's me and Gopa here.
Yeah, Jai, when I said Jai Sri Radhe, everyone went, Hari Bo. And don't get proud. It wasn't for you. I just said Jai Sri Radhe. No. No. Some people actually know you. Jimena said hello. You remember Jimena?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, it's very good. Jai Sri Radhe, one day you and Gopa, Priya, you have to come here to Colombia. It really...
By your blessing.
What?
By your blessing.
Okay, I bless you to come to Colombia. Okay, I know there's a lot. The problem is vacations, you know, it's always India is the priority. So, you know, people have to go to India, most people. And and then there's Siberia. People have to visit the igloos where they grew up. Okay. All right, enough. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hello,
Ramachandra
here. Hare Krishna. Sorry. So good to hear from you.
Wait, did I hear? Who else was there?
Alexander. Ramachandra.
Ramachandra. Hare Bo.
Hare Bo. Very nice class.
Oh, I'm looking forward so much to that presentation. I think it's an incredible idea.
I'm looking forward to the breakfast.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, when I said Brahmatirtha, Krishna Murari and Ladini Radha, who were sitting next to me, their eyes lit up in great affection for you and your wife.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Who else would say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Washington.
Hi, Janine.
Okay, okay, I'm hearing many people. And a few more, say hello.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Kalu Tonji.
Oh, hi, Bo. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Anybody else?
Okay. Hare Krishna Maharaj, Tota Gopinath here.
Okay, Tota Gopinath, Haribo. Okay, anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, okay. Priya.
I don't know, Priya, you can get away too, but I think you'd like it here. We have, it's morning program, we have in the temple every day, many classes. Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Gumaraj, this is Kishori.
Kishori, you're also invited. okay, anybody else? Okay, hi, Bo.